It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Gun violence is declining in Wisconsin and nationwide, but a program in Milwaukee that helps young people who are victims of violence is noting an influx of referrals.
Homicides and non-fatal shootings are each down more than 20% compared to the same time last year. That's according to City of Milwaukee crime data.
Project Ujima launched nearly 30 years ago. It aims to help youth and their families recover from gun violence.
Last month, the Everytown Community Safety Fund awarded the project a $100,000 grant to further their work.
To talk about the program, we turn to Dr. Michael Levis, a professor of pediatrics and medical director of Project Ujima at Children's Wisconsin. Dr. Levis, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you first talk about the name of this project and what does Ujima mean?
Ujima is a Swahili word for the concept of coming together to make things right. Project Ujima is a program that's been around for almost 25 years, based in Children's, Wisconsin, and it's what makes a child eligible is that they're a victim of some sort of violence. Most of the participants have experienced some sort of interpersonal violence, whether that be, you know, physical assault, ranging all the way to, you know, gunshot injuries. And what the program really does is tries to intervene in that cycle of violence and really embrace the youth and their families in programming that lets them know that someone does care, that someone does want to mentor, and that those experiences are not the defining moments of their lives, that they still have bright futures ahead of them.
Well, Dr. Levis, let's fast forward to present day. Project Ujima receiving a grant from Everytown Community Safety Fund for $100,000. How will this funding be used?
The funding mainly will be used for frontline service. So the way the project works is once you're enrolled with the project, every youth and family is assigned a crime victim advocate who really serves as kind of the liaison and like a case manager throughout their involvement with the project. And what we found is that with the increasing need, we've had to expand how many frontline workers we have. We don't want the crime victim advocates to have so large a caseload that they're not serving everyone well. So really that money will be used to expand crime victim advocate services.
What do these advocates do? What do these case managers do in the process?
So the main thing that they do, the first thing they do is try to interrupt the cycle of violence. Across the country, including in Wisconsin, 50% of interpersonal violence is due to ongoing disagreements, ongoing beef, if you would. The crime victim advocate is really trying to get to that youth and, you know, impart on them that there is, that they don't have to continue the cycle of violence, that we know that being shot once is the most likely predictor of you being shot again. We also know that being a victim of interpersonal violence increases your likelihood of becoming a victim again or becoming a perpetrator of violence. And we also know that being shot once decreases your 5-year life expectancy. Right now, firearm injuries are the number one killer of kids. I work in the emergency department, and the number one reason I have to tell a family that their child is dead is because of firearm violence or firearms. It's not cancer. It's not asthma. It's firearms. So anything that our crime victim advocate can do to stop that cycle is saving lives down the road. The next thing that they do is really become a mentor. Mentorship is one of the strongest evidence-based interventions for a variety of social stressors. So the programs across the country that do this kind of work, the main thing they serve is as a mentor, as a trusted adult, positive role model, and then help those youth identify who else in their lives are those positive adult role models. It doesn't necessarily have to be, the traditional role model you think of, but sometimes we help them identify that, hey, there's this teacher that seems to be really invested in you. That can be something you lean into. It might be a coach. It could be a pastor. It could be your aunt. It could be a grandmother. It could be the neighborhood leader, on your block, who really is kind of watching out for the youth. So we try to identify that and be mentors as well. And then on top of that, we identify a lot of social needs, right? If there's employment issues in the family, it's hard for a family to be super supportive if they're worried about where rent's coming from, if they're hungry, if there's housing issues. We also advocate in the legal system, right? A lot of times our youth are asked to testify. So we will go to the courts and serve as we will be kind of associates there. And that the gamut, it runs the gamut. We also have a lot of after school enrichment programming. We do a summer camp as well, that where we take about 60 to 80 of the highest risk youth in the summer, which is the most dangerous months in Milwaukee. And we have a summer camp where we let the kids play, and without them realizing we are doing enrichment type programming, positive reinforcement, leadership skills, self-compassion skills, et cetera.
What I'm hearing through all of these layers is that there are people and systems around these survivors who are there and interested and willing to step up and help through this really difficult period in life.
It takes a village, and it takes a lot of invested individuals to really change the trajectory of that youth. I think one of the things that's really important to understand with youth is, one, they're still learning, their brains aren't fully developed. I think the most recent scientific studies, tell us that our brains aren't fully developed till we're 25, right? And we're talking about as young as, we've had participants as young as 7, 8 years old, all the way up through the teens. And these kids are still developing their sense of self, developing their sense of self-worth, and they have dreams, right? They have all these dreams. And once, if they're shot, or if they're physically assaulted, or if they have repeated exposure to homicide, to gun violence, to suicide, a lot of times those dreams, the amount of dreams that they have, compresses. And it takes a lot of investment in terms of time and interest to keep those dreams alive, to keep those dreams open. And the evidence out there is that the more dreams and the more possibilities someone sees in themselves, the less likely they are to make poor choices or get involved with risk-taking behaviors. So really, what I love to tell people who are interested in this work is, even if you don't have the time or don't have the inclination to like change your job career to focus on this, just mentoring one kid can make a huge difference.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Levis, who is a pediatrics professor and medical director for Project Ujima, which is a project in Milwaukee that helps youth victims of violence. Dr. Lovis, you know, gun violence in Milwaukee has been trending down in recent years. There have been 118 homicides in Milwaukee this year compared to 31 more at the same time last year. That's from the Milwaukee Police Department. But I understand referrals to Project Ujima this year have outpaced referrals from the 2 years prior. What is happening there?
So it's true. The amount of homicides and fatal gun violence across the country has trended down. I think a lot of that is due to a lot of programs like Project Ujima, a lot of investment from national organizations to really try to stem that the tide of violence. What we have seen, though, is the ages of violently injured youth has shifted downwards. So even though there's less homicides and less volume on the adult side, a lot of your pediatric hospitals across the country are seeing an increase in referrals because it's our youth that are really not seeing that change in incidence of violent injury. The other thing is we don't just see youth who are shot. We see kids who are victims of physical assault as well, because we know that if we look back at youth who are victims of gun violence, there usually has been a pattern of more of risk-taking behavior being in risky situations that lead to that firearm injury. So we try to intervene early. So we don't wait till that firearm injury happens. We will take referrals for, you know, someone who was jumped or someone who got into a fist fight at school. So we are seeing those numbers increase as well. And then we know that there's vicarious trauma. So we don't just take the incident victim, we will see their siblings, because we know that having someone you love either murdered or victim of gun, or non-fatally injured or physically assaulted, that can be scary for your siblings as well. So we do take families, we take, holistics, and sometimes with the incident injury, they don't sign up, but we'll still enroll their sibling because we know that any inroad we have with the family can prevent that next injury, that next tragic event from happening.
Dr. Lovis, I wonder though, why are ages of violence and trauma, why is it getting younger?
I think what we've seen is disinvestment in youth. Really, a lot of stuff happened. A lot of the increase with youth being violently injured or being victims of violence coincides with COVID. And what we saw with COVID is that the most of your urban cities, most of the school districts went virtual. They canceled a lot of their after-school programming. They didn't do the sports, and they took longer to come back to being non-virtual. They took longer to reinstate their athletics. They took longer to reinstate their extracurriculars. And I think anytime you do not allow for youth to have pro-social engagement, you run the risk of them engaging in risk-taking behaviors. And then if you have a whole couple of years of that, I think that you have, this series of disinvestment that where the kids are feeling like they have less and less of those options, they have less opportunity, and they make poor choices. And then the cycle continues there.
Looking at the longevity and investment in this work on the project, you've been funded in previous years through several grant sources, U.S. Department of Justice, the National Alliance for Grieving Children. Is this funding enough, or what else do you need?
I think there's a lot of options for us going forward. Of course, we do think that we do rely a lot on federal and state funding, and those grants are very important for us to continue. The hospital system continues to invest, but there are other things out there, other options. The crime victim advocate work, I would argue, is more important than what I do in the emergency department. In the emergency department, the trauma surgery team and the emergency department team, we're really good at saving lives, physical lives, right? We're really good at plugging holes and bringing the body back to a healthy state. What Project Ujima does and other projects like it does is it helps heal the remainder of the story, right? It helps with the mental health. It helps with the well-being and is probably more impactful longitudinally than what I did in the emergency department. So I would love to see investment. Crime victim advocate work right now in Wisconsin is not reimbursable work, even though I would argue it is healthcare and it is a long-term health investment. There are 7 states in the country that do have Medicaid reimbursement for the work, and a lot of that kind of more stable service-based investment would really help with the longevity of the program, right? It would make us less grant dependent, less philanthropic support dependent. Other things too would just be, I think, if you know the public wants investment into this type of work, that's what they can talk to their legislators about. That this work is important, that this population, that there is something we can do to stem, you know, the number one killer of youth. So just having the public aware of and talking to their legislators about these type of programs and investing in these type of programs could be a big deal.
Dr. Levis, thank you for sharing and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That is Dr. Michael Levis, a professor of pediatrics and associate director of the Comprehensive Injury Center at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's medical director of Project Ujima at Children's Wisconsin. And for disclosure, Medical College of Wisconsin is a business sponsor of WPR.
You can follow and share important stories like these at our website and on social media. Head over to WPR.org to stream live and play archived audio, and follow us on social media with Facebook channels for Wisconsin Public Radio and WPR Music, Arts, and Culture. And you can get great photo and video stories on Wisconsin Public Radio's Instagram feed.